reason that I'm here is because, you know, the club is seeking change.
He said, well, whether you come or not, you're going to see a completely different first team under me.
You know, my hope and my desire and what I'm going to try and do is give our supporters hope and belief that we're going to embark on something special.
Congratulations, Dan. What did you make of the performance?
I thought performance was good. I think we made the game pretty difficult for ourselves. I mean, we'd certainly had enough chances and, controlled the game pretty much from start to finish. Obviously, when the scoreline is as it is, disappointing goal we conceded. That's probably the only disappointing thing of the day. I just thought it was preventable. So, but aside from that, I thought... I thought the lads really handled it really well in the second half. There's obviously a bit of anxiety around the place. Every game now, not just for us, for every club, has sort of extra significance. And I thought the lads stayed really calm through that process, kept playing our football, kept probing, and eventually got the rewards.
Welcome into the Tottenham Depot. I am your host, Andrew. You can follow me at Ace Detka. You can follow us at Tottenham Depot. This is episode 172. And if you're joining us on YouTube, welcome. You can follow us on YouTube as well, at Tottenham Depot. We're here to talk about Tottenham Hotspur 2, Luton Town 1, and plenty other of things from the Coy's world during the week. Start by throwing it out to Caroline. She is at CG Stefco. Caroline, I know you and I have both been battling a little bit of a cold, so the listeners and viewers will have to bear with us on the voices this week, but how are you on this fine Sunday?
Doing okay. Yeah, it was a pretty decent weekend of football for me, with the exception of, Harry Kane's current club, which we don't have to talk about until later, I guess.
Oh, but, yeah, it's on the rundown. Don't worry.
But I had a great night last night out at the SAFC game and, ready to talk about the, great Tottenham win yesterday as well.
Absolutely. Scott is also with us sipping his coffee this morning. He is at Scott G. Bird. Scotty, what's going on with you, man?
Chilling. Got to start by saying happy birthday to my lovely wife, Kat, on this fine Easter Sunday. Also, speaking of coffee, I'll show anyone viewing my nice Roy Kent mug here. It's actually my mother's, but I have absorbed it as my own. Good Sunday. Going to go hang at my grandmother's later today. It's Pasta Sunday for any Italian families out there. It's when Pasta Sunday falls on Easter Sunday, it's a big deal. So we're going to go eat. I went for a run and I'll skip lunch and I'll be nice and prepared for that meal this evening. So
perfect. Todd is also with us at TC_Kasho. TC, what's up, my friend?
Oh, any day that you get to talk about a Tottenham W and a ham dinner in the same conversation is a good fucking day. And we did a little Tottenham rooting yesterday morning, did a little Easter egg hunting this morning. So all the way around, good news.
Perfect. Sounds good all around. Guys, Spurs got what I called on Twitter yesterday, the most 2023-2024 Tottenham Hotspur win of all the 2023-2024 Tottenham Hotspur wins. This felt so symbolic of kind of everything that this team has been about this year. It was really ugly for a while, but also probably not as ugly as we want to make it seem. Spurs fell down early, came back, got the equalizer, got the late goal, the drama, all of it involved. There was halftime adjustments. There was a halftime substitution, which we'll come on to. But Caroline, let's start with you. What was just your kind of overall takeaway from a bounce back from the 2 weeks prior against Fulham, which going into an international break is never a good feeling, but they come out of an international break and get a really solid 2-1 victory over what's an obviously a lesser team.
Yeah, they are a lesser team, but I wasn't expecting them to be a team that was just going to roll over because they are still, heavily involved in that relegation scrap. And I think they do have some talented players. Obviously, we do have a better starting 11 than them in many respects, but they had their moments and obviously they took one of them very early on. And I'm just glad that, Spurs were able to get that comeback win, even though we had some incredibly bizarre bad luck along the way. Two of the strangest, you know, near goals that I've seen in quite a while. But in the end, I think our quality did win out, and it was good that the guys were able to just stay very patient and play our game and get the result that we deserved, I believe.
Scotty, this was one of those matches where, like, I don't know about you, but after falling down early and watching the rest of that first half, I was not really that discouraged. It felt a little, I wouldn't say unfair, but it felt a little bit lopsided to me in terms of the way Spurs were still producing the chances. And Caroline kind of alluded to it. There were so many chances that, you know, we can talk about the moment in the 14th minute when Deki got the ball ahead to Timo Werner. And once again, it's just a lack of finishing on his part.
Wait, what happened?
Like 5 minutes after that. Yeah, exactly. Like 5 minutes after that, there were a ton of chances. And, you know, Sar, I remember the one. Madison had one, I think, that was blocked. Sonny had one. It was just like Spurs were peppering the goal, but nothing was coming through. Was there frustration for you after that first half, like it appeared to be on the part of Ange Postecoglou?
I was frustrated. I laughed when he asked me the question because I was discouraged, you know, even if you were not. I think, for, you know, first of all, we got the result, and hindsight's always 20/20, but in the first half, it just felt stale. It felt like another match in which we weren't going to be up for a home game, especially. And granted, none of this happened, so I'm just speaking out loud now, right? But over the years, especially dating back to 16-17, it seems like we always were stumbling at home about this point in the season, right? When we had goals to achieve, it would be, you know, a 3-0 loss to Brighton or Sheffield, something like that at home. And so I think coming off the back of Fulham, up against a team like Luton, who is in a relegation scrap, who we should beat on paper, those are the types of teams that you might miss from a mentality standpoint, you know, if you're a player for Spurs in that situation. So I was a little bit concerned that we were seeing a repeat of what we'd seen year after year from the club. But to spin it positive, right, we see that things are changing and that we've got Ange Postecoglou at the helm. And he went in at halftime and got it sorted out, which, you know, again, we'll get to why that was, be it a few things, right? But I left yesterday with a ton of hope. And again, that stems from the fact that things are evidently changing, right? That's a game we would have not gotten a result in years past. And we got a result yesterday. So credit to Ange, credit to the lads. It was a very welcome change that I saw yesterday from Tottenham.
Yeah, I think, Andrew, the only fallout from the Fulham match that I felt is when we went down early in this game, I had that little – and then we had a couple of chances go wanting in Timo Werner. I had a feeling for the first time really this season, like, oh God, is a Fulham going to happen again? And then, you know, because it kind of felt like that for a little while. But honestly, like, as the game went on, as – Ange made the changes that he made and made him when he made him, more importantly. I was like, no. We're still playing our game. We're still doing our thing. We're going to be okay. There's more quality in this. The longer the game goes on, the more it favors us.
I bring it up only because – oh, go ahead, Scott.
No, sorry. Just going to say, I agree, Todd. I think we talked about this yesterday in the chat. My only concern, and I still have this concern, even if we got the result yesterday, and again, you all have heard me say this, but when you play such a oppressive and offensive style of football, right, you're just swarming and suffocating the other team, but the finishing's not there, it's a recipe for disaster, right? It really, really is, and I don't see the finishing still. Again, I know I'm getting down the run line here. Brennan Johnson comes on and saves our ass again. But our lack of ability to finish is concerning to me, and it's something that needs to be addressed as we progress through this Ange Postecoglou experiment. Because again, I'll say it one more time: if you're going to play such an aggressive offensive style of football and you're not going to finish, you're going to end up on the wrong end of results more often than not, right? At least in big matches. So it's something that that we escaped yesterday, but the problem is still there, in my opinion, and will need to be addressed.
I want to bring up Scott's favorite thing, XG, here, just to kind of put a bow on this part of the conversation. And you're shaking your head, but you're going to see where I'm going. For the match, and I looked back at this after the I watched the match later in the day. I wasn't able to watch it live, but I had no idea about the result going into watching it. I was still, you know, fresh. And I watched this match. And
first off, shout to you for being able to pull that off.
Yeah, it's crazy. I can never do it.
I try to do it. Look, I think there's only been one instance this season where I wasn't able to watch a match live and ended up knowing the result before watching it. I find it harder to watch a match when I know the result because I zone out. I know what's going to happen. If I can watch a match and not know the result, even if it's not live, it helps me stay focused and in the moment a lot more. And to feel the emotions of it. So that's why I try to do it when I can. And I was able to for this match yesterday. And when I got done, I was reflecting on it and kind of thinking about how we're going to discuss it here on the pod today. And then I went and looked at the statistics. And when I looked at the statistics, I was not that surprised, but it still raised my eyebrows. Spurs had 70% of the possession in this match compared to 30 for Luton. They had 2.99 expected goals compared to Luton's 0.52. So about a half a goal expected for Luton. They scored one. And almost three for Spurs, and they scored two. In the first half, Spurs had 1.27 XG and did not score, obviously. In the second half, they had the 1.72 and obviously scored two. So, and one of them being an own goal, which we'll come on to. But it just spoke to me that Spurs really did kind of run the whole show throughout the match. This was not Fulham, is my point. This was not an instance where Luton really had a grasp on the game. They got a goal early and that changed the complexion of it. And I get the frustration at halftime. I was feeling a little bit of that. But I was also not feeling like this was a Fulham redux. Like I did not feel in any way that Spurs were going to come out in the second half and just roll over in the kind of way that they sort of did against Fulham. That was presented to be a tougher match for them. I was encouraged. I do want to come on to the Brennan of it all because I think that's kind of an important part of this match. And let's just hear from Ange because Ange spoke about making the halftime change and taking Dejan Kulusevski off for Brennan Johnson. Let's hear what he had to say and then react to that.
No. Our wingers should be playing the same way. I think, you know, Decky kind of tried to get maybe too involved in the game a little bit and went looking for the ball because, I mean, he's that kind of player. He wants to be on the ball all the time. And I just thought we needed a different structure in the second half. But it's not about the individual players. There's still a structure there that they have to follow. And, you know, I thought it was really important. Obviously, we could see on our side, you know, by Timo being wide, he had two or three really good opportunities and we weren't getting the same joy on the other side. And I think it's because, you know, Decky was kind of coming inside looking for the ball. And with Brennan's pace and, you know, he's got really good quality delivery. He gets in the box. I just thought it was a game that was going to be good for him when he came on.
So the sub was made and I thought Brennan, obviously, I mean, Scott, you kind of alluded to it, saved our ass in the second half. He really gave Spurs a lot of life down that right side. And that kind of proved to be the difference for me. What did you make of that move that Ange made? I thought it was pretty brave and obviously paid off.
The first thing I'll say is it seems like that's how we're finding most of our production right now is through Brennan Johnson and smart low crosses across the face of goal. So I'm not surprised that Ann's made the change. I think it's still, I have a lot of thoughts right now. It still perplexes me how we don't always see that from Brennan when he starts. He's very effective as a substitute. And I think we've talked a little bit about that. I think his legs get tired. It's easier to find space behind the fullbacks. And I think he's much more effective off the bench than he is as a starter. But again, I think my only takeaway, not to continuously beat a dead horse and be so negative, is we've got to find other ways to produce opportunities and produce goals, because as good as Brennan Johnson has been, like I just said, he's much more effective off the bench, and we need to find more opportunities throughout the match before bringing on Brennan Johnson as a substitute. And we can't be a one-trick pony, Scotty, right?
To be fair, though, Scotty, if Timo Werner finishes his chance and if Sonny doesn't hit both posts and the ball bounces out, Decky's got two assists.
That's fair.
The chances are being created, and they've been created by other players on the team throughout the year. And Brennan Johnson himself has been on the receiving end of many of those chances and fluffed his lines. So if we're going to call out that's how awesome too. He's been, that's fair. But also, nobody's fucking finishing their chances. And that's a big part of the reason why we're in these close games late.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. I mean, I think it's oversight on my part, the chances that we did create in the first half that weren't finished. And I got to give Timo Werner credit. He has been creating chances. I think he's fluffing his chances right. And maybe it's not great that both of our wingers have a hard time putting the ball in the back of the net, but they are creating opportunities, and we can be happy for that, right? But I mean, if you look at our XG, like Andrew said, and I think – XG has its moments, right? It has its importance. But there is a very common thing of us producing a pretty positive and attractive looking XG, but not the goals to show with it. So again, all back to the finishing. And like we said earlier, a team so offensive that doesn't finish can find itself in tough situations. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing right now. But credit to Brennan Johnson for coming on and figuring it out.
Yeah, I do think we have been a little over-reliant on production from the wings. And I felt like in this game, Ange actually did respond to that pretty effectively by essentially changing the entire midfield by the end of the game. I feel like once we had Lo Celso and Bentancur come in, we were able to play a lot better centrally. And, you know, Lo Celso especially, I thought, had a really great game. And the thing with him is always just like, can he please stay fit so that we can see more of him? Because we know what he's capable of. It's just a matter of actually getting him on the pitch. But yeah, I think that's something that I've been critical of Ange of in the past, his substitution strategy. You know, too often he could be just either slow to make changes or not the right changes. And I feel like he got it absolutely spot on with this match. And even something like taking Son off, you know, after he had scored his goal, with an eye to keeping him fresh for the midweek game, and bringing someone like Højbjerg in, who you know is usually pretty reliable about just like holding down the fort.
He's the closer.
Exactly. Yeah. So it all of the subs made sense to me. And like the fact that he was bold enough to make the halftime substitution as well. You know, it's, I agree with Todd that we shouldn't be too harsh on Deki. It was just like not his day sometimes in terms of just luck, but also, you know, just the way we were playing on the day. But
and he can't control how shit Timo Werner is.
Well, but to be fair to Timo, if we're going to like defend people, he was involved in the, you know, the goal, the final goal. So.
And that's the only fucking good thing that he did the entire day. His passing was fucking woeful. He slashed hands on three different occasions and he got caught offsides. The fucking Timo Werner hat trick.
I'm gonna push back just slightly and side with Caroline here, TC, only because I think that
I'm not surprised.
I think with Timo Werner, I know you and I going at it on something. I get it. I think with Timo Werner, we have to start treating him. It's that like whole mindset of if it looks yes, just expect him to not be able to finish. Like we have to lower the like it's the whole mindset of if it looks like a duck and quacks, it's a duck. Like
I have
we can't expect him
to
be a horse.
In Timo Werner's finishing, as I do in Musa Sissoko's finishing at this point in time.
And
if
you know what?
If you can hit him with the ball and it can glance into the goal, we got a chance. If he's given the opportunity to look at an open goal, duck.
Well, to be fair, he was right there when the own goal happened. You know, if I can't remember what the name of the
so it caromed off the guy in front of him into the goal instead of Timo Werner. Thank you for making my point.
No, that's not the point. The point is that we've done this many times this season. It's the pressure that we create. We have forced so many own goals already this season. And I think that is part of our system working the way it's supposed to. I'm not going to say that Timo is the best finisher because I know from many years of watching him in various situations that he is not, you know, anywhere close to like a Son in terms of efficiency. But I do think he has a role to play. And just to get back to my original point, Brennan was really the game changer in this match. So again, kudos to Ange for getting those subs right, bringing in the freshness that we need. I feel like it had gotten a little bit stale and we saw that a little bit in the Fulham game as well. But honestly, I think this was such an improvement over the Fulham game in general because the whole team just looked better. Like in the Fulham game, it was just pretty woeful all around. And I felt like, you know, we had maybe a couple of players who were not quite on the level on this game, but overall it was just like night and day to me.
Can we have a Bissouma conversation?
I would love to have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, well, yeah, we can have it.
Before we do, though.
Hey, before we talk,
Scott, go ahead.
No, I do think one more thing needs to be pointed out about Timo Werner, and that's, and we all know how involved he was on the game winning goal, but that right there needs to be discussed because the run was perfect, the patience, the little tiny cutback, and then the sprint forward and the ball played. Think about the moment. There's a lot of pressure there. We need the result. So many players panic in that situation and don't stay patient and take their time and make the right pass, especially after missing chances. It's so easy to just throw your hands up, fuck me, after you've missed a couple of chances and just kind of shell up for the rest of the game. Honestly, when I'm playing soccer and I fuck up a couple times, I don't even want the ball, right? And like, I have to like have conversations with myself to be willing to like go receive passes again. Now I'm not a professional, but we're all human, right? And Timo Werner is a human being, and he did a wonderful job of staying really tough. Excuse me, between the ears yesterday, I think, and that his involvement in that last goal was spectacular. The again, I'll say it one more time: the patience, the restraint, the vision, everything he showed in that moment under such pressure, I think really needs to be applauded. So yes, he may be not finishing his chances, but right now, my goodness, right now for me, he's our preferred left wing. And I think I start him to the left of Sonny probably every match until he shows me differently if I'm Ange.
Well, and to speak to the human element there, it was like really nice for me to see just the pure relief after he, you know, contributed to that goal. Like he literally fell to the ground in relief. And I think that just shows that he is really working hard to try to earn a spot, like a permanent spot in the squad. You know, he's still on loan. But I just like to see that commitment. And I feel like that's something you can never doubt from him is the commitment part. You know, we want a little more production, but I feel like he's starting to get there.
Before we move on to Bissouma, as of right now, are you picking up the option on Timo Werner at the end of the season going into next year?
No.
I would. I really would.
Yeah, I'm in on it as well. It's 3-1 on this front. But that's not
again, look, not here's shocked. What I'll
say. Well, here's what I'll say though, Todd. I don't fully agree with Scott when he says he's the bang on every day, like starting left wing right now. I think he's a really good piece to have as a part of a squad. I'm not saying he needs to be the in and out every week starter, but going into a season next year where we think there's going to be European football, hopefully Champions League football, I think he's going to be a nice piece to have in the squad. And for the dollar amount, you know, for the cost that it's going to be for the option, I think it's a no brainer that you pick it up.
And so here's my thing. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I'm just going to say, I will also add that if he's starting next year at left wing, we're in serious trouble. He needs to be a bit part player next year, but I pick him up for that exact reason. We've got to invest on the wings in the offseason, in my opinion, heavily. But I think Timo needs to be around, like Andrew said, to pick up the slack when it's required.
Okay. From a value standpoint, right? I'm a value guy. I completely understand. Like, where are you going to find a Champions League winning winger for 13 million pounds? I get it. I 100% get that. But what I don't need is more unreliable finishers. There are plenty of people that can run fast in a straight line. I'd rather have Brennan Johnson start on the left-hand side. Shit, we've got a Richarlison problem if you want to talk about it. Stick Sonny on the left. Run Richarlison through the middle in a situation where you're playing a low block and you need to break it down. Now, you say that, and I'm with you because Sonny can't beat a man off the dribble if he's not using his pace, Andrew. So you put him back in the middle, and then you're talking about whom? Well, you guys are like, well, you know, Timo. I mean, kind of Timo. And, like, I get that. But at the same point in time, to Scott's point, we need to invest heavily in the wings. And if we're investing heavily in the wings, we've already got a bargain winger in Manor Solomon that's hanging out there for a song. If we're going to keep somebody because we're trying to be value on a dribbly winger, well, I'm going to take the $2 million option over the $13 million option if neither one of them are starting for me, Scott. Because I'm looking at this going, I can't depend on Timo Werner to score a goal when I have him through on goal and need him to score a goal. I can't depend on that. And I don't need more of that. I need less of that.
I'm not going to lie to you, Todd. I didn't see this conversation going into a comparing Timo Werner to Manor Solomon because there's no comparison right now. Manor Solomon has been on the field for 5 years. And I 100%
agree because we haven't – because resume, fair. And we've seen in other leagues Timo Werner score a goal when he was playing as a nine. My concern is Timo Werner off the wing – is not an effective option. And we're not going to play him as a nine because he's third choice as a nine. And so I'm looking at that going, if I've got a third choice nine and a second choice winger, I mean, that's fine for $13 million, I guess. But that's I think I'd rather run some of my guys from the academy out and see about giving them a run to get them some confidence into the team if I'm just talking about squad fodder for Europe. Bro, especially if we end up anywhere outside of the Champions League, like I'd much rather see some of these, you know, June Sunswift Bells and the Jamie Donleys and these cats get in there, do the Alfie Devines and things like, let's go. So that's just me.
I didn't know you had such a Timo Werner bias. I
value Timo Werner as a finisher and feel like there are 100 people that could do his job as a facilitator.
Look, Todd is just at the start of his Timo Werner journey. He'll get there. Don't worry.
That's true. Caroline's had a lot more experience with this.
Circle, Kez? Holy cannoli. And you were the one in the chat yesterday where I threw up the Timo Werner hat trick and we're like, and here comes his redemption goal. So I see you, Kez.
That's what I'm saying, though. He gets to the redemption eventually. It's going to happen.
It'll come. Let's have a Nene Bissouma conversation because Ange kind of touched on it. And I think, you know, I know Alistair Gold wrote a little bit about it. I'm of the mindset that right now in the sixth role, I think a very out of form Nene Bissouma is still probably the best option this team has over playing an injured Rodrigo Bentancur, who we learned this week has been dealing with a broken toe for the last month, which is kind of wild. It speaks to, you know, why he's been coming off the bench and not playing from the start and has been obviously dealing with injuries galore over the last few months.
Can we blame Matty Cash for this one too? Can we?
We can blame Matty Cash for whatever. I'm fine with that. But you know, Bentancur hurt. I don't think Sarr is fit for the sixth role. And Højbjerg, you know, we can come on to talking about Højbjerg. While I thought he had a really good, as you mentioned, Todd, closer role in this game and had a good he's not, I don't think he's starting in that role either. So
scored an assist,
that's kind of
break. Just saying.
Sure. But that's kind of where I want to start the conversation with Bissouma. Is an out of form Nene Bissouma still this team's best option in the sixth role right now?
Yes. Without a doubt. It's unfortunate because the form is not there, but yes, without question. I don't see Højbjerg being progressive enough at all. Bentancur is not whatever. We never know what's going on with Bentancur, right? He comes and goes at this point. So we really don't have another option. I have some thoughts, but we should probably get the opinion of the other two before I totally derail this conversation.
Well, my thought is that I don't actually think Bissouma is as progressive in practice as people believe he is. And his stats back it up. He's got 0 goals and 0 assists. I mean, I feel like that says enough. And all season long, I have preferred Bentancur in that role. But like you said, the problem is just the fitness. And it's kind of like you can't start Bentancur at this point, which is unfortunate. Because then your other option is a player who's just wildly out of form. And I think this is a huge recruitment opportunity for us this summer. I mean, yeah, that's all I've got on that.
I think Basuma's struggles this year have been well documented. I don't ever, like when he went down early in the year, he came back and he was just never quite the same dude. Even got dropped from the Mali team in this last international break. Like, the guy is just not on it. Now, I don't know if that's an injury. I don't know if that's mental. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Well, he had malaria during the AFCON.
Yeah, so I mean, realistically,
we keep using the malaria thing, but it's been said that that has not been affecting him. We keep bringing that up, but well, he's even just, said, but I'm saying,
he's in the class less than 20. He didn't play soccer for a month because of that, is all I'm saying. I mean, I'm not saying he has like some long symptoms from malaria. I'm just saying he didn't play for a month right after not playing.
Malaria? Is that what you're getting at, Scott?
I hope not. We don't need to be having those conversations on this podcast.
Certainly not.
But no.
Before you derail us, like you said you wanted to, Scott, and I'm fine with you derailing us away from Basuma, here's what I'll say about Basuma. He obviously had a really great start to the season. Those first 5 to 7 games from him were really, really strong. To Caroline's point, I'm not even looking for goals and assists from the number six role. They would be, Bentancur only has one Premier League goal in the season, no assists. So it's not like, and I think when we've seen him perform well, we've enjoyed it. What I'm looking for is the guy who can protect the center backs, recycle the ball, get it to the more attacking midfielders, and break the press. Exactly. And I haven't seen that. But what I also haven't seen is, if you go and look back to the goal that Luton scored yesterday, he's kind of weak in defense on that. He's not tracking back well. We've seen some defensive moments from him that aren't great. He also, there is still a weird, and I'm going to pick on him about this, and maybe I shouldn't, but there's still a weird discipline issue with him. We obviously saw what happened in the last match against Luton. He picked up a yellow card in this match after he had been taken off the pitch. He had been subbed off and picked up a yellow card in the celebration. That's the kind of shit that just is kind of dumb, and it can't happen. And I'm not in favor of it. Like, we need to see more intelligence and discipline out of our players than doing something like that. And I'm not going to glare on it. Go ahead.
Yeah, for clarity, those who haven't seen it, Basuma was walking around off the pitch after being subbed off. Sonny scores the goal. Basuma runs on the pitch to celebrate and kicks the ball into the goal. Yeah. So the referee
can't do that. You just can't do it. It's against the rules.
At this point, if anybody is in that situation with the ball bouncing to you and you ran over the ball because you were afraid of the yellow card you might get, you're a bigger person than I. That's all I'm saying.
But I literally wrote in my notes, Basuma loves a dumb yellow against Luton. Like, we've picked up on this now. Like, well, those are the kinds of things that are frustrating.
But you could have stopped that sentence before against Luton, and we could have kept it moving. And that's realistically the thing that we've been talking about that clown about for the entire year. The thing is that his ability to beat the press when he's in form, his ability to recycle the ball, his ability to protect the center backs when he's in form is top tier in the Premier League. And we've seen it. We saw it in spells for us. We saw it for years at Brighton. And so when you look at that and you go, well, that's not who we're getting. The question is why? And I don't know that we can answer that question now, but I don't think that there's any coincidence about the fact that this man's played a shit ton of international football this year and had fucking malaria and isn't necessarily playing his best. So we're just going to keep it there.
And a three-game red card suspension and – I think an injury that was short-lived, albeit, but an injury at some point this season too. So I think Andrew already said it. The dude just hasn't been consistently playing football for the past 12 months, and that's a huge part of what's going on. I also think, to your point, Todd, confidence plays a huge piece in this because his role, as you've already mentioned, is to get us out of our own half. He's very good at it when he's in form. One of the things that he did so well, and I talked about this on many shows in past this season, he was willing to absorb pressure from 2, even 3 guys with the ball at his feet. And he would always find his way out. He would make a pass or he would dribble his way out of it. You're only able to do that if your confidence is sky high, because it takes doing things that you shouldn't do, right? That you know are illogical or not safe, whatever you want to say, in your own half, right? But when your confidence is flying high and you're as talented as he is, you're able to pull that shit off. So right now, it's a lack of consistency, a lack of confidence. I will not be surprised at all if Bissouma is our starting six next year and doing a damn fine job. Said it many times, not a huge fan of the guy, but I can't knock him for the quality that he's shown this year on the football pitch by any means. And I will not be surprised, again, if he's our number six starting and doing a really good job next season. He just needs to play consistent soccer, in my opinion, to build the confidence up, and we'll see what we saw at the beginning of the year. If you think about his time at Brighton, confidence is high when you're the big fish in the small pond like you are at Brighton, right? He was one of the first players on the team sheet every day. The team revolved around him without question. Then you come to Spurs and you're playing with Sonny and you're playing with Højbjerg and you're playing with Bentancur. It's a different pond that he's swimming in now too, and I think he has to learn how to find confidence in this situation as well. But again, all confidence, right?
I want to talk a little bit about Roddy Dragosin's second start. I thought this was better than he looked against Fulham, but I still saw, and maybe this is a problem for me to deal with because I'm trying to not compare him to what we've seen from Mickey van de Ven all season long, but his passing is still a massive issue to me.
It's
he's extremely right-footed. He's very right-footed, and it's... I don't know that it's a long-term problem, but it certainly is eye-opening. And again, I'm trying not to do the straight comparison between he and van de Ven because I think they're two totally different types of players. But when you slot them into the same position, the obvious comparisons will be there. Now, van de Ven was apparently fit enough for the bench for this game, but did not start. I said last week that there could be an eye to there's a two matches this week. Spurs have a quick turnaround with West Ham coming up on Tuesday and then another match later in the week against Nottingham Forest. So maybe that's why that was. But I'm really interested in what you guys thought of Radu Dragosin's second start.
I thought defensively he is what we thought he was. And I thought he did some things extremely well. I thought he very much got caught out for that first goal. And there were a couple of different times where I feel like he turned the wrong way and Romero had to make up for his misstep. And all it takes at this level is one step in the wrong direction and you're fucked. The other thing is, and this, you're not alone in your struggles, Andrew, to not compare him to what we've seen from Mickey van de Ven. I think that this simply highlights exactly what type of a fucking find Mickey van de Ven has been for Spurs. I mean, literally, we have, when healthy, two quality, like true Rolls-Royce defenders, and I'm going to use the colloquialism because it applies, in van de Ven and Romero. It's incredible. So, Dragosin's woeful when it comes to passing the football. It's really bad. He's improving with shades of positivity as a defender in the Ange system. But if I'm watching him play football and on that coaching staff, like passing drills after practice.
A huge piece of that too is he's a right center back playing left center back. I think my honest question right now is why is Ben Davies not starting alongside of Romero? I don't know. And I'm not saying he should even. I'm just asking the question because I don't know if it's getting Dragosin bedded in and having a good opportunity to get him minutes. I don't know if you see something in training that makes you start Dragosin over Ben Davies. I have no idea, right? Go ahead.
I mean, we've kind of watched it for a decade. It's Ben Davies isn't fast enough to play that position in an Ange system. There's too much green space behind him when they're holding the line.
And like, I think that's part of it, but I also think
there's more than that.
Ben Davies was great when he and Royale had to play as center backs as in a makeshift situation. Royale, not so much as one would expect, right? He's not a center back, but Ben Davies was really good when he played for 7-8 matches in a row. I think when we looked at our situation needing a center back badly in this window, and you know you can probably only get one in, we go after a right-sided center back for a reason because Ben Davies is a viable backup to van de Ven, you know, albeit you prefer van de Ven all day long for obvious reasons. But I think this isn't even me saying why is Ben Davies not playing. That's not what the point of any of this. The point of this is Ragu Dragicin is a right center back playing left center back. It's evident in his passing. Nathan A. Clark shared a pass map from Dragicin yesterday. It was like 20 passes to the right side and two to the left side. And as a left-sided center back, that is the total opposite of what you're looking to do. It funnels everything to the right side. The biggest thing about the way we're supposed to play is to get the ball moving side to side and get the defense moving side to side to open up gaps. It's like, it's literally the ethos of our attack in the final third. And when you have a left-sided center back who won't move the ball to the left side, it really fucks up your ability to do that. And I think we saw that yesterday.
Yeah, I think that selection choice of Dragicin over Davis probably was also informed by the fact that Ben had just played extra time in a really important game for Wales, you know, this past week. So I think fitness wise, probably that made sense. And, you know, we had Van de Ven available in the squad, but I think the reasoning could have been you want him to be fresh for the West Ham game, which is going to be a lot more competitive. He's going to be coming up, I believe, against Jared Bowen, a very tough assignment. So obviously we would prefer to have him, you know, starting in that match over Dragicin. And if this was our, you know, compromise, then I think it was worth it. And I do think that Radu looked a lot more confident as the game went on, like to the point that we actually saw him getting involved in the attack, which is not something I feel like we saw from him in his previous, you know, two or three appearances. So yeah, he needs the game time. He needs the experience. He's got to get comfortable working with the rest of the squad. So I like that he was able to get some minutes in a game like this where the opponent is not as difficult. And, you know, we would love to see him actually playing on his preferred side and get a better idea of how he's going to work. But he filled in pretty well, I feel like.
I see. I don't want to see him playing on his preferred side very much, to be fair. Because that means that Romero's not playing, which means he probably did something fucking stupid and got sat down. So my whole point on this is it's the second Premier League start in for what he is and where we are. Not bad.
I also will make the point that I don't think we have seen the best in the last couple of starts from Destiny Adoghi, which can't help Dragicin. I think Adoghi's levels have dropped a tad. And that's not going to help playing on the same side as Dragicin either. But to your guys' point, and Caroline made the point, I was glad to see that one moment where Dragicin did take the initiative and go forward. That was kind of nice. I was like, oh, look at the big man run. Like, he's getting up into the attack. He's trying something a little bit different. I didn't mind that at all. But yeah, it's just the passing for me. Todd, you made the point. Like, his defensive actions, he is what we thought he was. He can be a good defender in moments, but there are also moments where you're like, oh man, that's not Mickey Van de Ven. We need to like make sure that his hand is being held a little bit. And it's an adjustment, it's a new league, it's all of those things. So I'm not freaking out about two matches, but this one better than the first one, but still not quite where we would want it. And I would love to see Mickey Van de Ven, you know, come back against West Ham. That will be something that's kind of interesting to see. In terms of the game, guys, I don't know what else we haven't covered. There was the goal line clearance, that moment in the, I think it was like around the 78th, 79th minute, which was just, it speaks to the number of chances that Spurs were able to create throughout this match and only scored the two goals, one of them being an own goal, obviously created by a great cross. But other than that, I mean, what else do we have before we want to talk about like some news and notes type of stuff from the week? I don't know what else there is to talk about from the game other than good victory. I started this conversation about the game kind of saying this was so quintessentially this season Spurs, just because I felt like it wasn't perfect, but it was halftime adjustments, some substitutions, some tweaks from the coach, and it kind of all worked out in the end. But boy, do they leave it like they kind of leave a little something to be desired at times, and that's the continued growth of this team under Ange for me, and that's kind of what I've liked to see.
I think we do have to shout out Sonny for becoming the club's fifth all-time goal scorer. And it was a really important goal, you know, to reach that milestone, because it just speaks to Sonny's commitment. Like, every game he's fighting until he leaves pitch. And he looked almost dead on his feet, but he still made that run and got it started also. So I just was very proud and happy of him in that moment. And, you know, living club legend, hopefully retires at Spurs. Enough said.
Yeah, good shout. The other thing I think is worth pointing out, and this is where I intended to derail us earlier from Bissouma and didn't, but Bissouma, I think, would benefit from this, but this is more of a Spurs in general conversation. I still think that we're missing something from James Maddison. And I'm not even picking on the guy. I think it's just worth a conversation. We have no offensive productivity through the middle. It's all on the flanks. It's all on the flanks. And until we can find more through the middle, we're not going to be as dangerous as we need to be. You need to keep defenses on their toes, having to guard the middle, having to wonder how they're going to cover the flanks, and then vice versa as the game progresses, right? I don't know if this is a hot shot or not, but I wouldn't mind seeing Deki start up the middle with Maddison on the bench and bring Maddison on later in a game at like the 60th minute or something. I think a great way for him to build his confidence is to create goals, whether it's assisting them or scoring them himself, which he was doing a lot of before he went down with an injury, right? Everything went through Maddison. And I think tired legs in the 65th minute, him coming on fresh is a good way for him to find some productivity and get his confidence built back up. And we all know Deki can do a job there without question, right? He just kind of does that anyways, just from the right side of the field. So I'd like to see Deki start alongside Bissouma and Sarr next match and see what happens.
I'm glad you brought that up, because before you even brought up Deki's name and started talking about Maddison, I was going to ask, like, what do we think about Deki in that role? And I don't hate it as an experiment, but you know, it would be something to figure out. Obviously, there are options on the wings. You know, Todd, you alluded to it earlier. Like, you could throw Johnson on the right, move Deki centrally, have Werner on the left. Richarlison's an option out wide. Any of those things.
Is this an opportunity to kind of segue to talking about Richarlison and you know, the fact that we saw him score what? How many games in a row? And then we haven't heard hide nor hair from him since, because our club captain and starting striker came back. Like,
well, some of that's injury related too, though. Like, he's been hurt.
I mean, it is. But my point is that we've seen Brennan on the left, we've seen Timo Werner on the left, we haven't seen Richie on the left, and or as much as maybe we could have. And so I'm curious, the fact that he didn't come in, the change was made, it ended up working out the way that it was supposed to. I wonder if the game script will be such against West Ham where we'll be able to see Richarlison make a difference.
It could be. That could be a good shout. I mean, obviously, with health, Ange has options, and he's going to need them with a two-match week and just all these matches coming down the line. You're going to have to adjust to opponent, to game script, all of those things, and it's something we've seen him be able to do mid-match like he did in this one in bringing in Brennan for Deki. I think the only surprise for me when he brought Brennan on for Kulusevski was that it wasn't moving Kulusevski centrally and taking someone else off like Maddison or someone, but it was just a straight swap for Deki, which I thought was the braveness of it. In taking Deki off the pitch is always, in my opinion, like, you're taking Deki off. That's interesting, because he's the guy that we've seen so many times late in a match do something with those beautiful, beautiful lungs that he has. He's got the stamina to be able to go 90, even if he's not having his best game. So taking him off was interesting. And again, maybe it was a little bit of an eye to a quick turnaround and a match on Tuesday. But it was also, I think, a little bit strategic in that sense. So that was impressive too. And an impressive decision. Guys, I want to go through, before we get out of here today, kind of some quick hitters, some news and notes type of stuff. From the week, we talked a little bit about Bentancur and his broken toe. That was something that was revealed this week. I'm going to be interested to see how that progresses the rest of the season. Is he going to be able to just continue to play this kind of bit part role off the bench with that and still have it heal properly? Or is he going to need to miss a few games to let that thing fully heal? That's something to keep an eye on. While away on international break, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg made some comments to a Danish outlet talking about basically not being happy with his playing time, which I think is, I'm okay with these comments. Like, it's not something that surprises me. I want to get TC's take, because I know he's the Højbjerg stan of all, but like, he's not happy. He would rather be playing more, but I think he's also a professional and kind of gets why. He's just not a fit for Ange's system, even though we've seen him in late roles like yesterday come on and do a job and do it professionally and do it well.
Well, he does a job in the system, as you said. And I think that that's the thing is that, you know, the comments that he made, if you actually go back and look at the way that he said them, he's like, well, of course I'm not, you know, you have the quote, Andrew, like, of course I'm not happy. But like, you know, we are where we are. I'm doing things that need to be done. I mean, that's what you would expect someone in a position where they're formerly someone who started every single Premier League match for the club since they came here to now being relegated to the last, you know, 10 to 30 minutes of a match just in mop-up duty or in shut down the shop duty. And especially when you go away and have a really productive 2 weeks with your national club and then come back and have a seat on the bench for another 80 minutes.
Right. Yeah. And the quote, just for the record, and this is obviously translated, but he said, of course, I'm not happy with what's going on at the club. It's not a secret, but it's also not something I'm screaming about. And I add parenthetically, I think that's the key. He's been very professional about this. Going on, he says, I can go to bed at night knowing I've done what I need to show the coach he has to believe in me. This is not the case at the moment, and it is the coach who has to explain why. And I don't have any problem with him saying that too. Like, I think Ange would have no problem saying Højbjerg fulfills a role on this team, but he's obviously not a fit long term for the system. He's probably going to move on in the summer, and I think we can all like tip our caps and say adieu, thank you for your service. You've done a great job, and he's been really professional throughout. I don't look at these quotes as anything, you know, like it's not him being a malcontent whatsoever to me. Harry Kane and Bayern Munich are coming back to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in August for a friendly, August 10th, a week before the new Premier League season starts. I saw it suggested that this could be part of the transfer with Bayern, that Bayern will come and play a friendly at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which will obviously benefit Spurs in terms of ticket sales and the like, which I think is kind of a funny thought. But I'm sure that Caroline has something to say about this, being both a Bayern and Spurs fan, and I know you wrote about it in your blog, but, you know, I know you're fully coys on this, but, like, it will be interesting to see both, not only Harry Kane, but Eric Dier return to White Hart Lane this summer.
Yeah, maybe the most surprising thing is that Dier is, like, actually still going to be with Bayern. I was under the impression when he first went on loan there that it was, like, a, you know, temporary thing and wasn't going to lead to him actually signing permanently with the club, but he has. So that is what it is. It's, you know, whenever people find out that I support both clubs, they always ask me, like, in a matchup between the two of them, who would you support? And, like, obviously the answer is Tottenham. When it comes to German soccer, like, my primary rooting interest is the national team. Like, that is what it is. But I still feel complicated about it because I feel weird about Harry being with Bayern at all. Like, it's just been a very strange situation where he's getting the goals and assists and the team is still playing like utter crap overall. So I feel very frustrated about that whole situation to begin with. And it will be interesting to see who the manager is for Bayern at this point, because, you know, we know that Tuchel is leaving at the end of the season. Thank the Lord. I'm kind of hoping that Nagelsmann comes back, but I guess that kind of depends on how Germany does with the Euros and whether he gets a contract extension with the national team. So I don't know. It's going to be an awkward one, but for me, it's not awkward because of Harry coming back to Tottenham. Like, I've already processed that. I do not care. It's just a non-factor for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I couldn't really care any less than I already do about all of that. And I think it's I the only element of it that I think is funny is that maybe and I haven't heard any confirmation of it, but I've seen it floated that maybe this was tied to the transfer and that Bayern's going to come play a friendly a week before the Premier League season starts. That's purely going to benefit Spurs, and I'm sure the fans will, you know, applaud and say, you know, give their waves to both players. I can't imagine there will be a lot of animosity, but I do just kind of think it's funny. Want to wrap the kind of news and notes before we look ahead to the week that is, talking about Richarlison again. We've talked a lot about Richarlison and his discussion on mental health and his own mental health and getting help a lot on the podcast over the last few weeks and months. Ange talked about it before the match. We're going to hear from him here, and I just want us to, you know, continue to shed light on this topic. So I think it's a good one.
Yeah, Richie has really benefited from, you know, the support that does exist, not just for him, but for others in the community. And I think because he has benefited so directly, I think he's, you know, he's taken on the responsibility of, you know, trying to share that around now. And it always makes more of an impact when it is somebody, you know, who's higher profile or in a position where we think, well, you know, they shouldn't really have any problems, or, you know, we see it as a sign of weakness when they're looking for help and support. And it's a credit to him that, you know, he could have dealt with this privately, obviously. but I think the public aspect of it is a brave decision for him, but more importantly, it's a great sort of, hopefully, a conduit for others to reach out and seek help, you know, when it's required. And as I said, there's always a balance to these things. And, you know, whether that's Richie or anyone else, is that you always understand that, you know, for all of us, we've got challenges in our lives. We've all got problems. And, you know, there's help you can get out there. And it shouldn't be, hopefully, get to the point where it's so overwhelming that it takes over everything else you do. And, you know, like I said, credit to Richie. He's sought help. He's got help, the right help. And now he wants others to also benefit from it.
Again, we've talked a lot about mental health on the podcast and the importance of it. Richarlison has obviously made this, you know, a real topic. We talked about Dele Alli earlier in the season and the strides that he's made in talking to people. I don't think we need to belabor the point, but I do just want to acknowledge it and say the comments from Ange there are beautiful as well. I just love the way that this club speaks about mental health and talks about the well-being of its players in general. I think it's not something new, and it's not something revolutionary, but it is important. I think it's a really important thing for that conversation to continue.
Absolutely. And Richarlison said, you know, therapy saved his life personally. And it's something where I know that going to therapy is the best thing that I've ever done. And as ever, when we have the opportunity to talk about mental health, I like to take the time to just let the listener know to check on your people. Give them a call. Check to see how they are. If you need somebody, find somebody to talk to.
Yeah, I think for me, what really was, I don't even know the word to use here, but just really gratifying, I guess, to see about the way Richie has approached this is that it really is in keeping with his activism in general, where he's just so focused on helping his community, helping people. Like it's not about him, you know, he really wants to help people. And I feel like he went beyond the sort of platitudes that we usually see when this topic comes up, and he was just very candid and honest about his experience. And I think that's really what's going to help people feel empowered to seek help themselves, you know, for him to be like frank about what the situation was. And, you know, it's a great thing when any athlete speaks up about mental health, but I think that he did it in a way that's really going to, you know, reach across some of those barriers that people have.
Yeah, well said, Caroline. I also think, you know, it's worth pointing out in this situation that for him to come out and share this, I think it's easy to look past how monumentally challenging, maybe is the way I would say something like that is to do. You know, he's a professional athlete and they do speak up for causes, blah, blah, blah. But when you're going through something like that, and I know from experience, you know, if anyone's curious to learn more, I'm always happy to chat, but you're reliving your trauma when you're getting on camera and going through that, right? And I have experienced this in my life. Sometimes it's easier to just shy away from that trauma and not engage in conversation that, again, put you in a situation where you're reliving that trauma, right? So for him to come on camera like that, it's not just like a good opportunity to promote, you know, mental health. It is, right? But the driving factor behind that is it's not an opportunity to just like put someone in a limelight for something. It's him saying like, I'm willing to relive my trauma so that other people can be helped by that. And that is not, that is someone who's truly seeking just being able to help others. There's, it's completely selfless. There's nothing self-centered around that decision, not looking for attention, blah, blah, blah. Right. It's a really challenging thing to do. And I'm just really, really happy that Richarlison plays for our club and that we have somebody in a Spurs shirt that we can be super proud of. Yeah. Love Richarlison to death.
It's really well said, Scotty. Two matches this week for Spurs coming up again, Tuesday, a trip to West Ham. Spurs lost the reverse fixture 2-1 back on December 7th. That was a match where both Van de Ven and Madison were a miss. Romero scored in the 11th minute, but Spurs conceded in the 52nd and 74th to lose that match at home. And then Nottingham Forest comes up on Sunday. This was, of course, the reverse fixture that was won December 15th, almost a week later, 2-0. Van de Ven and Madison also missed that match, but Deki assisted Richarlison on a goal just before halftime and then scored himself in the 65th minute. That was the match in which Bissouma got the straight red card in the 70th, but Spurs were able to hold on for those final 20 or so minutes anyhow. So two more opportunities for this team to grow and log points. If you look at the table right now, it is really, really interesting. Spurs have kind of separated themselves a little bit from that sixth spot. Right now sitting in fifth, but a full 8 points clear of Manchester United for sixth. They are still 3 points back of Villa for fourth, but have the game in hand still. So just still more opportunities for this team to keep getting better as the season kind of, I guess we could say the season's rounding third base now and starting to head toward that home stretch. There are not many games as baseball season isn't upon us here in the States. I'll make a baseball reference. Like, we are starting to get down to it now. The matches are going to start dwindling here pretty quickly over the next handful of weeks. We are entering April with an opportunity for this team to make the Champions League, which I think if you would have asked anyone at the start of the season, to be in this position is a really good thing. So I don't know. I'm excited for a two-match week. I'm excited for the opportunity to get back at West Ham for them winning the previous their own little cup final earlier in the season. We can get that revenge and then hopefully continue to knock Nottingham Forest down a peg as well. They're scrapping after their point deduction with Luton for that final relegation spot. Both of them are on 22 points. It's just that Nottingham Forest have a three goal better goal differential. So they are currently out of the relegation zone, but we'll see where they're at come. Everybody's playing midweek this week. So it's everybody's going to have a little bit of extra football to deal with this week. And we will as well coming back next week to talk to you then. Anybody else have any parting shots before we get out of here? TC?
I do. I had the good fortune to go see our former skipper Hugo Lloris in goal for LAFC out here in Will Ferrell land. And it was awesome. If you haven't had the chance to get to BMO Stadium, it's only 22,000 seats, and they packed the shit out of that place. And big shout to the 3252, which is their supporter section there. 96 minutes of that match, those motherfuckers did not stop singing, chanting, and banging drums. So Hugo played his ass off. Got to see a bunch of – Nashville was the team they were playing. So got to see a lot of international folks that, you know, are kind of towards the end of their career. Aaron Long actually plays for LAFC as well, which is wild if you're a USMNT fan. So a really, really good time. But most importantly, after the match, Hugo came over and signed one of my hats and like said hello to the fans, and it was one of the coolest experiences that you could have asked for. So shout to Hugo, shout to LAFC for an incredible, incredible experience. Truly one of the best experiences you could ask for in the interesting league that is MLS.
That's awesome, man. I had no idea about that experience. You did not fill us in about that, or maybe I just missed it in the group chat, but that's a really good one. That's good for Hugo.
All good. I'll shoot you some photos later.
I'm glad that he's happy and also glad that he's moved on at the same time too.
Oh, he's such a happy dude. His wife is happy, and as married guys know, something along the lines of happy wife and something about happy life. I don't know. But what I do know is that Hugo and his kids look like they were stoked, and like Elizabeth Banks was there for those Pitch Perfect fans in the crowd. Like, there was a Falcon. The Falcon got lost and they found it later. I mean, it was all the way around wild situation. I highly recommend it.
A live Falcon got lost? Falcon?
So one of the things that they do out there is the Falcon takes off and comes back and lands on the thing, right? You've seen it in events. Well, sure, this particular night, this particular Falcon was like, we're going to check out the LA skyline. So deuces, they found him in a neighboring building, just chilling. Shout out to Ollie the Falcon, and brought it back. And after the match was over, they showed Ollie on the big screen. Ollie's safe back in BMO Stadium. So all was well with the world. But for a little bit.
That sounds sketchy. Are we sure that was Ollie or was that a body double?
Instagram. And she was like, there was a time when she was very worried. They're like, the Falcon's never done this before. I blame myself. Anyway.
Poor Elizabeth Banks. We don't need her taking the fall for that.
Absolutely that's not. Terrible. She's a national treasure.
No, 100%. 100%. Oh, yeah. Man. All right. Well, I think that's as good a place as ever to wrap this episode of the Tottenham Depot. Be sure to follow us at Tottenham Depot on all your social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, TikTok, wherever you follow us, give us some love there. Be sure to rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice as well. And like and subscribe to the YouTube channel too. That's where we are streaming video of the podcast each and every week, even though my Wi-Fi has been a little spotty today. We'll clean that up in post. For Caroline, she is at CG Stefco. For Scott, at Scott G Bird. For Todd at TC _ Cachot. I am Andrew at A Stetka. We'll talk to you next week. As always, come on, you Spurs.